Yeah, they gave me a shorter sign and I put it on a longer pole to get it above everybody else, I guess.
Alaskans and neighbors spar over the oil tax referendum. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, tribal governments in BC describe their support for mining development in the region.
There are no 100% guarantees. We go into this with our eyes wide open.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized John Deere dealer. The Anchorage location just behind the Ship Creek Salmon Fishing offers a wide range of John Deere compact tractors. CraigTaylorEquipment.com.
On top of being the most expensive ballot measure in state history, next week's referendum on oil taxes may also be one of the most contentious. The polling shows a tight race, with the state's voters almost equally divided on the question, which means that no matter which side you're on, it's almost inevitable you'll have to deal with someone who disagrees. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has this story of a block divided.
Denise Roselle and Dan Anderson share a lot as neighbors. He plows her driveway, she lets him park his truck there. Their Spinard Ranch homes are nearly identical, save the paint jobs. But there's one area where they're clearly divided.
I'm voting yes on Proposition 1.
I'm voting no on Proposition 1.
The neighbors have been waging a tiny battle of the yard signs. It started when Roselle put one up that said, "Repeal the oil giveaway." Anderson responded with a sign supporting the new tax structure, and he propped it up 6 feet high.
Yeah, they gave me a shorter sign, and I put it on a longer pole to get it above everybody else, I guess.
So Roselle raised hers, too, and stuck another yes on one sign to the side of her house. Then they started adding candidate signs. Anderson was approached by the Mia Costello for state Senate campaign, and Roselle put up signs for
Claire Ross and then Matt Klayman, and now I have a baggage sign up as well.
By now, she thinks people have noticed the escalation.
We just kind of talked about if our neighbors were laughing at our sign wars out there.
The rivalry is friendly, but Roselle and Anderson see the referendum as a critical fight over Alaska's future. Crude has brought in more than $100 billion in state tax dollars since the North Slope fields were developed, but now less oil is being pumped out of them. Roselle was one of nearly 50,000 voters who signed a petition to get the referendum on the ballot, and she doesn't think capping the tax rate will stop that decline. As a teacher, she's worried it will just mean less money for schools.
Our state constitution says we're an owner state, and it seems that we are giving away our resources to somebody else, to oil companies.
Meanwhile, Anderson thinks that lower taxes will encourage industry to find new oil, which could be good for a contractor like him.
My economy is based on me having a job. And in Alaska, more jobs come out of oil than almost anything.
Both Roselle and Anderson have spent a lot of time thinking about the question and trying to approach it from good faith. For all their passion, they each acknowledge the global oil market is so unpredictable, you can't be certain how much each tax system will capture in the future, and that how you vote depends on who you trust in a lot of ways. But even though they both feel strongly about the referendum, they're not talking about it with each other too much.
It's very serious. You know, my neighbor and I have to agree to not discuss it because we want to remain friends. You know, we have a lot to lose if we became enemies.
Not all the sign wars being waged this campaign cycle have been so civil. Recently, the Vote Yes, Repeal the Giveaway campaign has been posting photos to their Facebook page of handmade signs that have been smashed, and they say they have one report of a sign being set on fire. The Vote No on One campaign also says they've had to deal with signs being stolen and vandalized. In Anchorage, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
A new political ad is homing in on the technology companies U.S. Senate candidate Mead Treadwell founded, saying they're helping the government erode privacy. Treadwell calls the claims absurd. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Put Alaska First is an independent super PAC working to re-elect Democrat Mark Begich. In previous ads, it went after Republican challenger Dan Sullivan. The new ad takes a small swipe at Sullivan, but aims at Treadwell.
Mead Treadwell created a company that helped the government spy on people and launched another company that pushed a national ID card.
Treadwell says one of his companies created the technology behind Google Street View and vehicle-mounted cameras that helped the military map Iraq and Afghanistan. Treadwell says the company doesn't spy on Americans.
The only surveillance that I was ever aware of that any of our cameras did is some guy threw, actually two guys, threw at different times grenades or IEDs at the Humvee carrying our camera.
Another company he founded, called Digimark, makes identification cards, digital files, and currency harder to counterfeit. It has, according to Senate records, lobbied for Real ID, which critics charge is a national ID program. Treadwell says he served as an officer of Digimark for a year and later consulted for the company. He still owns shares worth up to $250,000, but he says he doesn't control what the company lobbies for. Treadwell, though, remains a director of another company he founded called Venture Ad Astra. Treadwell acknowledges that company asked for and got a $2 million federal earmark penned by Senator Lisa Murkowski in 2010, even though Treadwell has been a critic of earmarks. Treadwell says an earmark wasn't his first choice for funding. He says the company won a competitive bid from the Air Force Research Lab for technology to enhance GPS.
They came back to many of their contractors and said, we don't have enough money in our budget. If you encourage the Congress to fund our budget at the appropriate level, the contract will go forward.
Treadwell says the earmarking process that existed then forced companies like his into a disingenuous position. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, longliners in Southeast score a court win over a Fisheries Observer program.
We don't hesitate to speak our piece with federal agencies when we see them doing something awry.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Bethel's tribe, ONC, wants people to come forward regarding allegations of city police mistreating Native people. In addition, the Association of Village Council Presidents released a letter that they sent to Bethel's mayor about the matter. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
In a press release, Gloria Simeon, the president of ONC, Bethel's Tribe, says the council is very disturbed by recent allegations of brutality by a City of Bethel police officer toward an inebriated, quote, Indian male. Simeon says the problem, she believes, is instability with the city administration.
Going on, what, four city managers, it's been hard to set up meetings to deal directly with these problems, and we're hoping that by taking this action and making a press release that we cannot tolerate this kind of behavior and this fear within the community of the Bethel Police Department and people that are in law enforcement, that this must be addressed.
Simeon says ONC's tribal council met with the City of Bethel's acting city manager Greg Moyer and police chief Andre Ashe during their regular monthly meeting on August 6th. They discussed allegations of police brutality made by Linda Green through a letter to the editor of the Delta Discovery newspaper on July 23rd. Simeon says the ONC Tribal Council has concerns about how the police are treating these categories of people.
The stereotypical Native male who was targeted by authority figures. It seems to be a problem not only here but in other areas. Women alone at night on the streets are also very vulnerable. And, of course, people who are inebriated and do not have control of their faculties are certainly the most vulnerable. And those are the people that we need to protect.
Simeon says the ONC Council hopes to work with the Bethel City Council to ensure that there are not violations of basic human rights and to improve the relationship of the Bethel Police Department with the community they serve.
I'm hoping that we can work together and deal with this issue. It's all in our best interest to make this community safe for everyone, and we all should be treated with dignity and respect, no matter what our circumstances or our condition.
City of Bethel officials repeatedly declined to talk with KYUK last week about the allegations and investigation. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
For the first time in the United States, a technology traditionally used on humans is testing possible widespread threats to food security. The technology is filter paper, and it's used to collect blood samples. Throughout the Bering Strait region, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is distributing the paper to subsistence hunters to collect blood specimens from subsistence mammals. James Berner with ANTHC is leading the project, which is funded by a $1 million grant from the Environmental Protection Agency.
We'll put kits together in a small plastic bag. The kit has an envelope to mail the dried filter paper sample in and a form for the hunter to fill out that says what the animal is and the sex and where it was collected and the date.
The samples will test for metal contaminants like mercury, human-made contaminants like PCB, and antibodies to pathogens an animal has previously been exposed to. The researchers theorize contaminants and pathogens are escalating in the Arctic as climate change alters wind and ocean currents. If these substances are increasing, they could accumulate in the bodies of subsistence mammals, threatening food security for communities throughout Western Alaska.
Right now, we don't know the magnitude and the actors in the food security threats. We only know what they might be and what we've found in a few animals over the years. And the way to deal with this is to be able to test the herds that you harvest from and find out what the prevalence of any given risk is.
Filter paper is more convenient for hunters than traditional methods of sampling, such as syringes and vials. Berner says the kits can be carried in a coat pocket, they don't have to be kept frozen, and they're easy to mail. Richard Kuzguk is with the Shishmaref Environmental Program and underwent training with ANTHC on how to use the kits this summer. Kuzguk says he will be part of a team distributing the kits to hunters in Shishmaref. He says recent instances, like the 2011 unusual mortality event, which saw dozens of seals in the Bering Sea region fall ill and some to die from a still unknown illness, is motivating hunters to participate.
We depend on bearded seal for a good portion of our diet year-round. That area and concern with health and safety with our subsistence food is a real high priority.
Kuzguk expects 70% of the community's hunters to take part in the sampling effort. The project is slated to run 3 years. Some Alaska tribal organizations say last week's dam break at a British Columbia mine shows what could happen closer to home. The groups say similar dams planned for several near-border mines could damage or destroy fish runs in both countries. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld recently visited British Columbia as part of his ongoing series on transboundary mine issues. He found some tribal governments strongly support development.
Here you'll see some of the types of ways that we use Ilikins. They're sun-dried as well as smoked.
Carrie Small explains what's in a display case in Northwest British Columbia's Nisga Museum. It's a gleaming glass-fronted building in a wide valley about 20 miles from the Alaska border. The valley surrounds the Nass River, home to the Nisga Nation and its tribal government, which is at the forefront of Canada's Aboriginal rights movement. Small points to a carved rectangular wooden dish used to process ulikans, also called candlefish or hooligan.
The bottom's laid with fern. You kind of like cook it down, and that's how you create the grease. And this is ulikan grease. It's like liquid gold, you know? And it's one of the most valuable items still to this day.
The ulikan has been called the survival fish because it's a very important part of our cycle of food that we get in abundance.
Kevin McKay is executive chairman of the Nisga government's legislature. He says the Nisga people depend on the health of the Nass River to keep the ulikan coming, as well as salmon. But they also need jobs. That's one of the reasons the tribal government signed an agreement this summer pledging support for the Kerr Sulphuretz Mitchell mine under development to the north.
I will tell you exactly what we said to our people, our citizens, and that is we have taken every measure and every opportunity to mitigate those environmental impacts throughout the life of the project.
KSM will store its tailings, ground up rock left over from ore processing, behind dams within the Nass River watershed.
We had some concerns with the original design that they had presented throughout the course of our negotiations.
McKay says those changes will cost the developer a couple $100 million. KSM says changes made to address Aboriginal concerns bring the amount to about $500 million.
Now, I dare say, without that significant move by the proponent, it may not have been possible for the parties to reach a mutual agreement.
Total development costs for the mine are estimated at $5.3 billion. McKay says the Nisga agreement with KSM also provides lump sum payments, training, jobs, and environmental protections.
There are no 100% guarantees. We go into this with our eyes wide open.
You know, I just firmly believe that this is a bad idea.
Ketchikan's Rob Sanderson Jr. co-chairs the Southeast Alaska-based United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group. It's backed by the Tlingit-Haida Central Council, as well as several communities' tribal governments. All the groups say the KSM and other near-boundary mines could threaten the Yunik, the Stikine, or the Taku Rivers, which flow from Canada into Alaska.
We live in a very seismic area of the world, and one of our big concerns about the KSM is the scale.
They're not just concerned about when the mines are operating. Sanderson and other critics worry about the decades or centuries after they close, when tailings dams fail.
You know, if they get up to capacity and production, we have a catastrophic event. You know, that pretty much puts southeast Alaska into a dead zone.
Those objections won the backing of the Washington, D.C.-based National Congress of American Indians this summer. It's urging Congress, the White House, and the State Department to push Canadian officials to increase environmental scrutiny, but the KSM's environmental protection plans are close to approval, and the Red Chris mine, owned by the same company that had the dam collapse, is already extracting ore within the Stikine River watershed. Other mining projects concerning tribal groups are Galore Creek and Shaft Creek in the Stikine River watershed and Tulsiqua Chief near the Taku River. This is Ed Schoenfeld.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
A longtime competitor in one of Alaska's most rugged backcountry races has died. Rob Carer was found dead while competing in the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic over the weekend in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve. KCHU's Tony Gorman has more.
On Sunday morning, Wrangell St. Elias Park and Preserve officials received a call from the Rescue Coordination Center at Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson needing help locating Rob Carer. Peter Christian is the chief ranger for Wrangell St. Elias. He said the 44-year-old was last seen Saturday afternoon by his partner in his pack raft on the Tana River, a tributary of the Chittenah River.
Shortly thereafter, his partner lost sight of him, and he disappeared down the river. So that's all we had to go on when we responded to this.
Search efforts were based out of McCarthy. Around 4 p.m., Carer's body was found by an Alaska Air National Guard helicopter crew about 2.5 miles downstream from where he was last seen. His body was later transported to Providence Hospital in Anchorage. Carer, a Mat-Su resident, was a 10-year veteran of the race. The race itself is 32 years old and has been held in various places such as the Brooks Range, Kenai Peninsula, and Talkeetna Mountains. Since 2012, has been held in Wrangell St. Elias. Christian says it is an unsanctioned event and is not permitted in the park.
We don't permit events of a competitive nature. Designated wilderness isn't for that type of thing, and so we can't permit any type of organized race. So the Wilderness Classic, if it happens in the park, can only happen as an unsanctioned event. And, you know, if they tell us that they're just a group of friends traveling together in the mountains, you know, we don't keep tabs or keep track of those people in that event.
Christian says park officials cannot stop the event because they don't know when it's held every year. He says they plan to talk to the event's organizers in order to prevent a similar event from happening again. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
A U.S. District Court judge has ruled that a newly implemented fisheries observer program in the Gulf of Alaska may have become unreliable and is sending federal managers back to the drawing board to fix it. The decision is being hailed as a victory by Southeast Alaska's longline fleet, who have chafed under the new system, which requires them to carry human observers on their relatively small vessels. But federal fisheries managers see it as a win, too. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The observer program is not going away. Instead, the court's action may compel the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, to find a way to remodel it, which is what the small boat fleet has wanted since the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council adopted the new plan in 2010. Joel Hansen is the conservation director for the boat company, the nonprofit regional cruise company cum environmental organization that brought the lawsuit.
We don't hesitate to speak our piece with federal agencies when we see them doing something awry.
In this case, something awry meant redistributing observer coverage on Alaska's trawlers, who drag huge nets along the ocean floor scooping up pollock, in order to create an observer program for the halibut fleet, generally smaller boats who use a type of gear called longlines, which catch fish on hooks. Hansen says NOAA, acting under the direction of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, just got it wrong. The observer program is intended to keep track of bycatch, or the number and kinds of fish being caught unintentionally. Restructuring the program was supposed to improve coverage of the fisheries, but Hansen believes it's gotten worse.
So this was an opportunity for us to look at what the outcome of the restructuring program was, where it should be, and how to make it more like what we think the public expected and what we certainly expected.
And Judge H. Russell Holland agreed in part. In his 50-page ruling, Judge Holland says coverage under the new system risks dropping below a reliable threshold. The government doesn't necessarily dispute that finding.
The analysis that the judge has asked us to do is actually very helpful.
Martin Leflad directs fisheries monitoring for NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Science Center in Seattle. Judge Holland's decision requires the agency to prepare another environmental analysis to ensure that enough observers are on enough boats to gather reliable data on bycatch.
And we're certainly game to do that because we, too, share the concern of a data quality issue.
Unfortunately for fishermen, better coverage may mean an increase in costs. The fleet pays 1.25% of its gross sales to fund the observer program. The Magnuson-Stevens Act caps those fees at 2%, but there are still millions of dollars in play. Lefled says the decision validates the government's efforts to expand observer coverage in the 25 years since it began.
The court's judgment on us is really quite a success story because it has preserved many of the strides that we were able to get through with the restructured observer program working through the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. So many of those things that didn't occur in the past are now present today.
Foremost among those new things is coverage of the halibut longline fleet, which did not have to carry observers until last season. An organization calling itself the Fixed Gear Alliance intervened in the lawsuit on behalf of the boat company. Linda Benkin is the director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA, which is a member of the alliance.
The main improvement we hope to see in the program is an increase in observer coverage on the vessels where bycatch is an issue. So salmon bycatch is all in the trawl fishery, halibut bycatch primarily in the trawl fishery, to see better coverage.
The Fixed Gear Alliance also wanted to see electronic monitoring addressed in NOAA's new environmental analysis, but Judge Holland did not allow that argument to move forward. Electronic monitoring would have to be adopted by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, a process that is by no means fast. None of this is particularly fast. The boat company's attorney, Paul Olson, filed this suit in 2012 with Earth Justice. Although the observer program isn't going away, Olson considers the ruling a win anyway, since the government is going to have to take another hard look.
Basically, what the court said was that your NEPA analysis failed to consider whether you would acquire statistically reliable data at significantly reduced coverage rates, especially for the trawl fleet.
NEPA stands for National Environmental Policy Act. In this case, a new NEPA analysis means not necessarily starting from scratch, but a new document and a new opportunity for the public, the small boat halibut fleet, and U.S. senators to comment on the process. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Bethel, Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome, Tony Gorman in Valdez, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez and Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, fueling Alaska for more than 60 years with a full range of residential, commercial, aviation, and marine fuel products. Crowley also fuels community events, from summer fun runs to public radio. More at CrowleyFuels.com.
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at SmileAlaska.com.
And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson Project, proving energy lives here. The primary election is August 19th. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., and you'll be voting for governor, lieutenant governor, state senator, state representative, and ballot measures. So when you vote, bring identification. If your name is not on the list or you don't have an ID, you may vote a question ballot. The question ballot updates your voter registration. If you need language or other assistance while voting, ask the election board or bring somebody to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.